Before we begin this episode, we would like to give a shout out to our patrons on patreon.com/bitterbrownfems, especially Jen, Daniel, Audrey, Natalie, Danielle, Saul, Maria, Luis, Edis, and Kimberly. If you'd like to support this podcast in return for awesome rewards, it really helps us keep this thing going. You can do so at patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. All right, let's start the show.
We'll do it live. We'll do it live!
Fuck it!
Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Fucking thing sucks!
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3.
Hi, and welcome back to the first episode of 2019 of Bitter Brown Fems. I am your host, Ruben. But you might know me as that mad bitch on the internet, Queer Chicano Chisme.
And this is Cassandra. I'm fairly pleasant on the internet, so hi.
Yeah, that's why you keep getting suspended from Facebook.
Wow. Yes. Oh. Yeah, I was banned. I don't know if I mentioned it on our last episode, but I got banned when we were... Where were we? In Cal State in LA. I got banned for a month from Chicanismo, and then I finally got it back, and then I think like 2 weeks ago I got suspended again. So for fucking 30 days. So yeah. Fuck you, Facebook.
Yeah, I don't even use Facebook anymore. Really, like every now, like sometimes I even forget. Like I'm like, oh, I haven't posted here like in weeks. Like I should post something. Yeah,
I like Facebook. I mean, I hate Facebook because they're always ban me, and there's a lot of awful people on there. But I mean, just like there's awful people on the internet, period. But I don't know. It's just easier for me to post there on Chicanismo than it is like on Instagram or Twitter. But it's just more convenient. So I don't know. But anyway, how?
I just get more engagement on Instagram, and it's like I get to take care of like an aesthetic. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's like
two different. Very different platforms. Like, it's...
Yeah.
The same thing, I don't manage them the same way, because it's, like, a different audience, it's a different way to, like, comment and read... Like, it's a whole different... Two very different platforms. But,
yeah.
Anyway, how have you been? How has 2019 been?
So far, you know, it's been crap, but it's, you know, it's gonna get... You know, como dice el gringo, it gets better, right? So, it'll get better.
Just will it? Because I got my cards read, and they were like, nah, bitch. This year's going to be awful, too. I was like, wow. Okay.
Ooh. Yeah, no, I've just been hustling. I got my cards read, too, at, like, this
party. I got it read at a New Year's Eve party. Yeah, and then I was like, wow, this just ruined, like, it was, like, right before midnight, and I was like, I'm gonna get my cards read, and I have probably a great year ahead of me, because this one was so bad, and then she was like, nah, and I left the room, and I was like, I don't even want to count down, like, just so sad. It's all this negative energy around me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was in, like, some, like, classy bar, but it's, like, classy for Sacramento, for New Year's Eve, and, like, I don't even remember there, like, anybody counting down. If it's, like, oh, all of a sudden, like, oh, it's New Year's. Oh, okay. That's what we're doing. It was just such a trash night. But my New Year's always suck, but 2020 is gonna be my year.
2020? I was like, well,
yeah.
I was kind of hoping 2019 would be my year, because it's like an odd number. And 2020 is just like, yeah. Oh, great. Another like election year.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, we're like about to hit the election, like people running, and just from now until elections next year, just a hot ass mess again.
Yeah, I'm already tired of it. Like, they're already, like, promoting Kamala Harris's, like, cop ass.
I was about to say her cop ass.
Like, the new... Yeah. Like, as, like, the new, like, liberal, like, you know, hero.
All the candidates people are mentioning are so, they're just, this is, like, the best that you have to offer us. Like, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Beto O'Rourke. Like, these are your, I just, all of, no, absolutely not. I'm tired. I'm tired of these fucking liberals that we have to vote for.
I remember when that was it called, like, that Ocasio-Cortez girl, when they were like, were trying to shame her for that dancing video. Like, Kamala Harris, like, put out a tweet like, I also like to dance. No, she was like, Kamala Harris put out a tweet that was like, I like to keep my dancing in the politics. And it was like her, like, doing a little jig, like, in her, like, political chair. And then they were like, you like dancing except for when it's like sex workers on a pole, huh? And it was like, oh yeah, true.
That's so embarrassing. I saw like a memes, but I didn't know the context, and it was like this one meme of her dancing, and it's like, when school officers go to your school and they're pretending to dance with your kids before they arrest them or something. Like, no, it was like when police officers dance with your kids right before they arrest them. It's so embarrassing. She's like, you know when Hillary Clinton was doing like all that Pokemon emoji shit? That's like what she's going to be doing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And then I also saw this video. I don't know how recent it is. I'll need to send it to you. But it's like of Hillary Clinton in like some interview. And she's like, you know, everyone is... She didn't say talking shit, but she was like, I don't know what word she used, but she was like, everyone is like upset about Kamala Harris, and I like her. And you know what? If you don't like the Democratic Party, then you should leave. I was like, okay, bitch, we already left. Like,
wasn't that about like immigrants, though? Wasn't it like if you're...
It could have been.
It was like if you're like...
I need to find it, but it was just, she was like, if you don't like it, leave. I'm like, ooh, okay.
Or maybe, yeah, or maybe I internalized it, like, you know, because, like, you know, I lived in an immigrant community, so for me, I guess I just, maybe I read it that way, but it was like, if you don't like it, go back to your country. And I was like, okay, bitch, like, that's how it came off to me.
It comes off, like, but I'm like, don't, like, you're really sitting here and acting like your party is, like, the best. Party, and like there's nothing wrong with your party, okay?
Yeah. And it was it's like when that girl invites you to their sleepover, like that mean girl, and then she's like, if you have something to say about our s'mores, you can leave.
Our s'mores?
I don't know. What do white people do? I don't know how to. I'm okay. I just revealed that I'd never gone to a slumber party. So is that not why the white people make s'mores?
I think they do that when they go camping.
Oh, see, I don't do that either.
I don't know. I guess they could do that in their backyard, right? Or if they have a fireplace. I don't know. I wasn't privileged enough to do the s'mores thing.
I did an emikomal once. Like, I just, like, burned a marshmallow on the comal.
What do you say marshmallows in Spanish? Bonbones?
Bonbones, that's such a weird... Yeah.
I feel like bonbones, isn't that, like, the brand? No.
Girl, I don't know.
Okay, maybe.
I was raised in LA.
Does that mean?
You're more close to the homeland, so.
That is true. Speaking of my homeland, though, the reason, everyone, that I got banned this time, because I've been banned for multiple reasons, you know, for being misandrist. And this last time, though, was because, let me break it down for you all. Let me tell you the cheese, man. There's this ugly guy here in my city. He's short. He's ugly. He has a receding hairline. Let me stop. Okay. His name is Anthony. Okay. Let me put that out there. His name is Anthony, and he runs a couple, not just one. He runs like 5 pages on Facebook that are like right-wing conservative pages. And one of them is called What's Up El Paso. And we have a local newspaper called What's Up El Paso. You know, like, they just, it's not political, but they just, you know, like, do entertainment, and you can get it at the corner store for free every week, whatever. So I think that he purposely used that name because a lot of people followed it thinking it was the newspaper.
Yeah.
But then when you realize that you're following like this right-wing fucking conservative page, a lot of people are like, what the fuck? So they unfollow him. But anyway, he has a lot of followers outside of El Paso, which is really scary because I've seen the comments and they're like just very violent, like militia type white people. When like Confederate flag, like they're very, you know, those people that are like, yeah, build the wall and let's arm ourselves and invaders. Like those are his followers. This guy's not white, by the way. Okay. He's a fucking Mexican, which is super fucking embarrassing. But anyway, so I kind of posted his picture, because I actually don't even know how I came across this. Cause I said he has like 5 pages. One of them is him, like his personal page. He has like 3 personal pages and then 5 political pages. I don't know. But I came across one and he was going downtown to record refugees that were being dropped off and like following them and following organizers and trying to like expose them and putting them on his page, which is very fucking like not okay and like violent. And so I took screenshots and I made a post about it because I wanted to warn like people in our community, like watch out for this guy, right? Like if you see him, like get him the fuck out of there. And Facebook banned me for that. I think he saw it and reported it and I got banned. So that's why I'm fucking banned. And it just really, like, it came down in like an hour. That's how fast Facebook was to protect his ass. So fuck you, Facebook. I wasn't putting, like, his personal, like, information. They were screenshots from him, like, from his page. I was just like, yeah. Yo, like, this guy is going, like, you know, maybe I said he should get his ass beat. I don't know. Maybe that's why they banned me. I don't care, but I still stand by that. But you know what's so funny? I posted this and people, you know, locally were, like, sharing it. And my boyfriend reminded me, he's like, we had gotten in like an argument with this guy at a protest, and I talked about this protest on one of our episodes. It was like when I made this white girl cry, and it was like a protest like in solidarity with
the border, right? When the asylum seekers.
So there was like counter protesters. There was only like 5 of them, but he was one of them. And so I was, like, blocking their signs, and then he was, like, filming. I didn't know who he was. He was just filming with his phone, and I started arguing with him, which I shouldn't have, but he was riling me up. So I was arguing with him, and I was getting very mad because he kept filming me, and then it was so funny because there was 2 guys from the Brown Berets that were there, and they were walking over, and they were big guys, and they were like, yo, like, what's up? Like, what the fuck is up, like, to that guy? And he literally took off in his car. It was, like, the best. But anyway, this was the guy. So this guy's, like, all talk. That's all he does. He just incites violence on his page. But if you confront him in person, he's a little bitch. So anyway, all of that to say that when I said that he was recording refugees is because over, I think this was on Christmas, El Paso made, like, national news because their ICE was dropping off refugees, like, in the middle of the night in downtown El Paso at the Greyhound. And so I don't know if you all saw it, but there was, like, a lot of coverage of, like, for example, like, Beto O'Rourke, downtown El Paso, like, feeding refugees, and there was, like, 200 of them that got dropped off. So it was just, like, this big thing in the news, and people were like, well, why are there, like, 500 refugees being dropped off in the middle of nowhere? Like, what does that mean? Like, did they enter here, quote-unquote, illegally? It was just, like, this weird thing, which, again, made national headlines, and especially in El Paso, like, in our local news, in our community, like, there was all these, like, conversations about why are they being dropped off in our community, and, you know, all, like, the racists or whatever. But the whole thing is that this is not, like, a weird thing. It happens all the time. So when refugees are in detention, they usually, if they have sponsors, like, family members, they get to go and stay with them wherever they are in the United States. They're called sponsors. Like, a lot of them are actually let out with ankle bracelets so that they can be monitored. And then, you know, if one of them is like, well, my sister lives in California, then they get to go to California and be with their family, with their sponsor, until it's time to go to court. Then they have to go to court or whatever, right? Which could take a year, 2 years. And so, so once they, like, you know, go through the process of, this is my sponsor, this is where I'm going to go, they get their paperwork, ICE kind of just has to release them. Like, they don't pay for them to go to wherever they need to go. Like, if they're here in El Paso and their family member lives in North Carolina, they're going to have to find their own way there, whether that's, like, on a bus or getting picked up somehow. Like, ICE has nothing to do with that. They just kind of release them. So ICE has, I would say, a relationship with some of the organizations here in El Paso, or like shelters. Like a relationship in a sense where ICE will be like, you know, we have this amount of refugees. Do you have space there? If not, we're going to call this other place to see if they communicate with them, so they don't just randomly drop them off in the street. Like, they have somewhere to go, and the shelters and orgs are aware of what they need and how many beds they need, you know, whatever. So this is something that's been happening for years. Like, it's not an out of the norm thing. But a lot of people, especially in El Paso, don't know that this happens because, I mean, it doesn't really affect them, I would say. Like, it's not something that's, like, you see, like, 200 people being dropped off. Like, it's over, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just not something that's, like, out in the public. And of course, they don't want it to be either, because a lot of these locations are secret. Like, they don't, it's just, like, unless you're part of organizing spaces, you don't really know that that's, like, what goes on, right? So on Christmas, and they had done this to, actually, I think 2 months ago, they randomly just dropped off, like, 200 of them at the Greyhound station, and the people at the Greyhound station didn't know what to do, so then they called the cops, and then they ended up calling the shelters because, like, they knew, like, they would take them in, but it just became this thing where I think people just took it like, oh, they're just being dropped off, and like, they didn't know that they had already been through, like, all the, like, legal processing, are here already, like, they have already gone through, like, the asylum process, you know what I mean? So they were just making it seem like, oh, like, they're just dropping all these people off, and like, they're just gonna go into the community and like wander around, or like, they have nowhere to go. And it was fucked up too, because it was like, obviously on Christmas Day, it was fucking cold, so a lot of these kids had to be taken to hospitals and had to be seen by, like, EMTs because they didn't have jackets and ICE just fucking left them, right? So that was, like, the whole thing that was happening. But again, this is not a new thing. And the shelters were kind of like, well, we don't know why ICE did that. We don't know why ICE just, like, didn't call us and just left them here. And now it's, like, this big thing on national news. And so I think a week ago, ICE was like, oh, it was a mistake. And obviously it wasn't a mistake. I feel really strongly that it was just intentional, because they knew that the media would be on it, and it creates this, like, sense of, like, oh, they're invading us, and, like, they're just here, and, like, how did they all get in here? You know, like, that whole narrative, which is why that guy that got me banned was going down there and, like, filming people and, like, following these buses to, like, the location where the shelters were, which is not fucking okay at all. It was like harassment and stalking. So anyway, that was the rundown of what happened, but I did want to share that just for, like, people that saw that on the news, or just to let people know how that process works, like, how, you know, sponsoring works. I know that when we were traveling, me and you, Ruben, like, a lot, every time that I would be at the airport, like, I would see a lot of these refugees going to wherever. A lot of them actually were on my flights to California, and I knew that they were refugees because they look lost, and I saw the ankle bracelet, and so I picked up on that, and I would, like, help them navigate the airport, because they literally just drop them off, and they don't really know where they're going, and a lot of them don't speak Spanish. So that's just, like, a heads up. I mean, I don't know how many, I'm not, like, every time you go to the airport, look to see if someone's wearing an ankle bracelet. Like, obviously not, but you can kind of see people that are maybe confused or lost, and just like things to pick up on, because like there was, like I said, a few every time I was on a flight, like I would see some of them, and like I could tell that they were just like, I obviously, like, it's overwhelming. So anyway, so yeah, that was what was happening here in El Paso for the last month. And like I said, it's not an uncommon thing. It's still happening. I don't think it's in the news, in the spotlight right now anymore, because everyone forgot about it. And I'm sure ICE is going to do that again, because like I said, they did it 2 months ago prior to that. Like, they just randomly dropped everybody off to create this, like, sense of, like, crisis at the border that is not a thing. But that's what,
yeah,
that's what we're seeing more of right now, especially with the government shutdown and Trump saying that, you know, he needs to build a wall and he's gonna do it, and we're kind of in this
limbo. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, everything is shit, right? I like think about, like, you know, how, like, supposedly, like, the Democrats are, like, holding strong or whatever, like, you know, like, not giving in to funding the wall. Which, by the way, like, the wall, like, let's get something out of the way. Like, the wall is, like, useless. Like, the wall is not going to stop people from, like, coming into the U.S. Like, you think, you know, immigrants who have crossed, like, jungles and, like, put up with so much violence are going to let, like, some bricks, like, get in between them and, like, the promise of, like, not, like, the best life, but, like, you know, livable conditions? Like, it's really not. Like, what this wall is just, like, a fucking symbol, like, of, like, American imperialism, of American superiority, of, like, ethno-nationalism. Like, that's what this wall is. It isn't no fucking self, like, it's not, like, national defense. It's not keeping anything safe. It's just a fucking monument. It's just an ego thing, right? Like, it's so ridiculous. And if politicians don't know this, then they're just, you know, playing the fool, right? And so with this government shutdown, right, like, there's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people, government workers, who, you know, not only politicians, but also, like, you know, people who just, you know, who work for the government in, like, the most some of the most basic, like, capacities, right, who are not getting paid, right? And so supposedly the Democrats, like, try to pass something to, like, you know, help alleviate the situation, and that included this thing that they voted on, like, apparently, like, allowed funding to DHS, right? Which is, like, the thing that funds ICE, right? And so, it like, kind of exemplifies how, like, even liberals, like, function under this, like, thing of doing, like, symbolic gestures of, like, oh, we're not funding the wall, right? But they're still, like, funding other things that still uphold, right? Like, the wall, or, like, the what the represents, right, which is just, like, you know, xenophobic violence. And among them, like, is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right, who, like, I understand that she gets a lot of criticism, and a lot of it is really unfair, and a lot of it is really misogynistic and racist, and a lot of it comes from, like, the right wing, and there's a certain, like, instinct to, like, defend her against everything, right? Because she doesn't deserve that hate. But also, she ran, like, on a quote-unquote, like, social, you know, socialist, democratic socialist, like, platform, right, of progressiveness, where, you know, she said abolish ICE a million times, right, only for her to, like, go back on it once she was in power, right? And so I bring her up because there's, like, this culture of, like, idolation that has, like, come up around her that I think is gonna do us bad, more bad than good as we go forward, right? People are really caught up, people are really caught up on like this, like, you know, she represents like all like, you know, marginalized millennials, but it's like, I'm sorry, but like as a marginalized millennial, like I ain't trying to fund no fucking like ICE. Like I ain't trying to like help this violent state hurt more people.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about her before, and I feel now, especially that she's there now in the White House. And it is, every time I see her in the news or like right wing people like tweeting about, like, I see the attacks, like, as a brown woman, like, very sexist, like, that dancing video of her that we were talking about, like, what the fuck is that? Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, that's sexist. It's also, like, I feel also, like, this sort of, like, sexualization, and I feel like it ties back to, like, this, like, the Latina thing. Just the way that they talk about her, like, the way that they just hate her and, like, attack her particularly, like, I see it, and it bothers the shit out of me, because it's not okay, and also because, obviously, like, she's a Latina, so I see that, and it bothers me, and it's wrong, but I also don't want to get caught up in that, you know, and, like, just defending her and defending her, and by defending her, like, excusing her politics, which we've mentioned before, you know, her tweets about technically like reforming ICE and aside, I mean, right now we're talking about ICE, but it's also like very like pro-Israel shit and just like other things. And that doesn't mean, I feel like she's just, I know that she's new, she's young, and I feel like even more so, like it's even better to critique her so that she can see what people, you know what I mean? So she can understand that there are critiques, and it's just not like we're going to defend you because these attacks are uncalled for, which they are. And yeah. I don't know. It's just, sometimes it also does feel like pandering. I feel like she obviously wants to share, like she's young. Yeah. She uses social media. Obviously we all do. And like relating to like people is like important, but sometimes I'm just like, girl, stop. Like with the hoop.
Oh my God. That hoop earring, yeah. I'm just like tired of hoop earrings.
I'm so tired. Like, I think when we first met, we were talking about this in Portland. And I was like, how do you feel about the hoop thing? That was like one of the questions I had. Like, how do you feel about this hoop shit? And we were like, no. Like, what was it? The white girl, like, take off your hoops shit. Oh my God. Yeah. I'm sorry. I know a lot of people are probably listening to this like canceled. But I just, I don't know. If you want to put your energy into the hoop thing, I guess, whatever. I just feel like there's so many other things to talk about than, like, some white girl wearing fucking hoop earrings. Like, I don't know. But, yeah, that hoop shit was corny.
I feel like this, like, hoop earring discourse is, like, not specific enough. Like, I don't know. Like, I remember, like, somebody calling out like some white models for like wearing like a simple like gold loop around their ear, and I was like, what? Those are so whack. Like, those are so basic. Those are not what my like sisters and like the hood girls I grew up with even wore. Like, y'all just like want to fight people. But even despite that, like, I don't feel like Ocasio-Cortez's like hoops were like it either. Like, they were just like regular gold loops.
But I feel like that's how it is with a lot of quote-unquote cultural appropriation things. Like, people are like you said, it's not like a specific thing, it's just like I don't know, it's just like a reason to say this belongs to me. It's weird. I don't know. But yeah, that hoop thing, I don't care. I personally don't care whoever the fuck wears hoops. I mean, if a white girl wants to wear the big hoops and look silly, go be silly. Look silly. I don't know.
And I get where it comes from, but I also like that is not the common denominator for me. Like okay, this girl Ocasio-Cortez is like wearing hoops and a red lip, and okay, she's gonna go like fund ICE. That does not represent me. Like, that is how is that?
Yes, like, Latina power.
Latina, like, Latina's doing it big. Educated Latina, hashtag, right? Like, it's so stupid. Like,
oh, can we like, talk? Okay, that's for another day, because I hate that educated Latina shit. Educated anything shit. Like, everyone's scared.
Or everyone's scared of an educated Latina. And I'm like,
yeah, I'm like, no one's scared, bitch.
They just think you're an asshole. Because you go everywhere saying you went to college. Like,
yeah. Yes, and I hate it because I'm also like, what about the people that don't have the chance to go, like, to college? Like, does that make them not educated? Or, because I feel like I'm about to drop out if I haven't already. And I'm just like, I don't know, even, I don't just, I'm still smarter than a lot of you that say that. Hey. So. I'm just kidding, kind of. But no, I hate that narrative. I hate the whole educated, because I get it. I get where it's coming from, especially, you know, we weren't always allowed to go to school. Like, I get all that shit. But at the same time, I'm like, let's not put an emphasis on, like, I'm educated Latina. I'm like, okay.
Because, like, for me, it's like, okay, you're educated. So what are you doing with that? Like, Ted Cruz went to college, too. He's Latino. He's an educated Latino, too. Like, like, what does this mean? I'm going to give him a sweater that says hashtag educated Latina. Let's see if he wears it. Because it doesn't mean anything. Like, it doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't.
And so, with Ocasio-Cortez, I'm just like, okay, girl, like, I get it. You eat ramen because you're also broke like me, but like not anymore because now you're in the White House. But for a minute, we were like, we probably had the same amount. We probably had the same amount in our bank account, and we were both eating like sopa, you know, the basto or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. But like now that you're in power and that you have, you know, the ability to do some like real, like different, to make some real differences in this world. Like, you're just siding with the status quo. Like, I don't know that I can support that, because it definitely does not align with my beliefs. And I think with a lot of people, I think that a lot of us stop at like representation and then don't think about what that representation is doing. And like, that's exactly what's going on with her. Like, everybody was hype about her dancing video. Everybody was hype about like all these relatable things that she puts on Instagram, like a photo of her and her entire family, like when she was getting sworn in, like, and you know, the hoops and the white suit and like the picture of her with all the other, like, you know, progressives.
I hate that picture. Let me stop. That picture. So, you know what picture I'm talking about, right? Where it's like her, like all like, yeah, the, yeah, new faces, the women of color. Yeah, that picture. And I'm like, what was it? It was like, okay, intersectional imperialism. Yeah. Or intersectional.
Yeah.
But I just, because I know Veronica Escobar, who was in that picture, who is a woman of color that got elected from Texas. She actually took Beto O'Rourke's seat. She is also, she's from El Paso. And she, no. Come on, no. Absolutely not. She is trash. And she voted to demolish Duranguito, technically. So fuck her. And, but, you know, every time I see her in articles, it's like, you know, first Latina from Texas. I'm like, okay, she's still trash, but okay.
Yeah, and every time people are like, oh, they had to make these hard choices, right? They had to, like, vote for this. And I'm like, why? Why? And nobody can ever answer, like, why do you have to make the, hard, like, quote-unquote hard choice to fund a fucking violent, like, State Department? Why do you have to make these quote-unquote hard choices to fucking, like destroy like a town, right? Like, there is no moral reasoning for it, and there's no real reasoning, and it all comes down like, oh, they gotta play a game. And like, why do they have to play that game? Like, and it's just like,
I also find it like when people are like, oh, you know, like they don't have a choice, like they kind of have to compromise essentially, right? Like, at the same time, like, how are you out here, like, on Twitter and Instagram or wherever, saying, like, all these things, like, fuck Trump. I mean, I'm not saying she said that, but, for example, like, saying, because she replies back to a lot of, like, the Republicans, right? Like, she's not scared to be like, oh, well, like, she's really outspoken, let's say that, which is good, okay, right? But it's like, how are you going to be, yeah, I'm outspoken and I'm here to represent this, but when it comes down to it, you have to, you can't even like hold it down, you know what I mean? So I don't know, with this government shutdown, I think earlier today, actually right before we started recording, Trump was giving, I guess, like a speech about it. And it's just his whole, you know, thing is like, it's kind of like who, I don't know, like Trump wants a wall, the Democrats are resist, quote unquote, resisting. And it's like, when is this going to be over? Like, how is this going to end? Are they going to end up compromising? They're going to have to give something up. Like, it's just, the shitty thing is obviously that it affects regular ass people that have nothing to do with this shit. You know, like when government shut down, like that's kind of, I mean, if it didn't affect actual people, like who the, I wouldn't give a shit, you know, but it's like people don't have way to pay their fucking bills. Like people that need food stamps, people like all of this shit is cut off for what? Because like Trump wants a fucking wall?
Yeah, that's my thing. It's like, why, I get, I can understand that compromises are made, but it's like, why do those compromises have to be human lives, right? And like, there's no adequate response to that other than the fact that like these people don't see them as human, right? These people, these like these politicians don't see these people as humans, right? they don't, there has to be something, a better way, right?
And it doesn't help that they voted fucking Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House again.
Which is like, wasn't Nancy Pelosi like railing against AOC just like a minute ago? And like, it's just ridiculous. Everything is shit.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward for, you know, running. I wonder if any Republicans are, all the Democratic people that have been saying they're going to run. Oh, Jesus. And then curious to see who's going to run against Trump, which I feel no one is going to beat Trump and the Republican Party, but I'm just curious to see if anyone will try. Because at this point, it's like any fucking Republican is better than Trump. And that's a lot to say, but I'm just really scared that he's going to get reelected, which is a really big possibility.
Oh, it really is. It really is. But I'm thinking about how, like, liberals, like, enable this, right, with their, like, not taking, like, hard enough stances against the current regime, right, or, playing into the tactics that the right wing has set for them, right, and ignoring the violence that happens within their own shit, right? So I'm thinking immediately about at Buck and how he's like this like Democratic like donor, but also like how his involvement with him has led to the death of two black men, right? One of who was a queer black sex worker, right? And the other one who's black sex worker named Jamel Moore, and the other one whose identity still hasn't been released. But about how, you know, this donor at Buck, this person who was very involved in the Democratic Party, like, hasn't been persecuted at all, despite, like, two people died in his home of, like, drug overdoses, right? Because of some fetish that he has of getting, like, black men high, right? And it's just, like, How are people not denouncing him? How is he not being persecuted? And it's, like, a part of that whole, like, narrative of, like, you know, liberals are the good guys, right? And so they can do no bad, right? And that's kind of shielded him. And it's just, like, one of the ways in which, like, this culture of idolization, right, has led to this type of violence.
Yeah, I saw that story earlier today, and I just hope they make an arrest soon, but I wasn't really familiar with who this, I don't even know what his actual job is. I know all the articles are like, oh, he's rich and he donates a lot of money to Democratic politicians. But I don't know what his actual job is. So I was trying to Google him, and all I got was he was actually involved in like a Democratic movement at one point in Arizona. He ran for city council. I'm assuming where he lives in West Hollywood. He didn't win, but so he's just very active in like the Democratic Party, whether that's like trying to run for city council, being in like some kind of protest or movement, and also donating money. But it's like, if we know why he's being protected or why these deaths haven't been looked into, or him as a suspect, he's rich, he's white, he's a man, like, of course. But I felt like it was very important for them to highlight that he was a Democratic donor, because we usually think of just Republicans as like these awful people and like not Democrats. And they kind of just hide behind that. I actually read that he switched parties in 88 because of the homophobia from the Republican Party, which doesn't say much. It's just like white gay men that they only have a problem with homophobia, but they're okay with like racism.
Yeah. And even then, like, hashtag, like, not all white gay men, right? And I say this in the worst possible way, because like last year, towards the end of the year, there was like these two like gay men who had been like longtime donors to the Democratic Party. Their names are Bill White and Brian Ure, and they were like featured in, I think, the New York Times, how basically they were only donors to the Democratic Party because like they expected like, you know, like celebrity and things like that, right? But after they got, like, you know, after same-sex marriage passed, they were like, there's no reason to continue donating to them because it's not getting them celebrity. And it just reminded me about how, like, the only oppression that a lot of, you know, cis white gay men have is just, like, their gayness. But once that becomes, like, mainstream, like, there's nothing keeping them from relishing, like, the privileges of, like, whiteness and manhood, right? Cis manhood.
Yeah. What? Just like white women. But, you know.
You know.
But I really do hope that a lot of people, that the story doesn't get swept under the rug, and that it gets attention, but that especially he gets looked into. I mean, I would say, like, I want him to get arrested, obviously, and charged, but if they're going to do that, like, at least look into that, right? Because it's not a fucking coincidence, and it wasn't a coincidence the first time. But also to highlight that these men were black gay men. We know that one of them was a sex worker. And just to kind of let, you know, focus on that story too, because I think, you know, right now the biggest story went of, because so many things are happening right now, is like R. Kelly, right? And which we can go into R. Kelly because I think it's important, but one of the derailments that I see a lot or surrounding R. Kelly is that, you know, what about the male victims? Why can't we talk about male victims? Which there's a lot of derailments that we can go into, but that's like one that I see obviously a lot, and not just with R. Kelly, just in general from men. Every time we're talking about women and women survivors. So yeah, so to all the people, you know, that want to talk about male, you know, male victims, like, here's a story that we can all share and hope that we get justice for these men.
Yeah, it's a good point about, like, continuing to talk about it and uplift it and, like, ensure that we get some sort of justice, right? Because, like you mentioned, I think about R. Kelly, and I think about how, like, now with the documentary, the documentary series that came out on Lifetime, like, there's a new interest in it, but it's, like, black women have been, like, talking about this and, like, rallying against R. Kelly for like more than a decade, right? I remember being like 10 or something when like that Boondocks episode came out where they were like talking about the R. Kelly case, right? And it has like its moment where like it's like the front page story and then everybody forgets, right? And then I feel like we're entering like a new cycle of that, right? Complete with like this like wave of support for R. Kelly, right? Which reminds me, like, which is not just, like, which on top of, like, being, like, the civilian support, right? So I'm talking to, like, more people are, like, downloading his music or streaming his music, right? He saw, I think, like, a 20% in, or it was, like, a high percent of, like, rise in streams and since the documentary came out, And then last time when, like, in last summer, actually, when BuzzFeed published the news that he was holding women hostages in his house, his ticket sales went up too. And it's just like the cycle of, like, he's on the news and, like, people are trying to find justice, but then other people want to support him, like, because it's easier to support abusers than survivors. Like, these cycles keep continuing, and all they do when we're not actually finding justice is re-traumatizing people who have to witness this circus, like, over and over and over again, right? So I couldn't even watch the documentary. Like, I was just like, I'm just like, this is going to be trigger central. Like, I already know everything this motherfucker has done. Like, I don't need to watch another 6 hours plus of trauma.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, we've talked about R. Kelly, and I want to say more than one episode. And I know that over the years, like, I've shared these articles of these women telling their story. So, but again, it wasn't like, it doesn't really get much attention. I think sometimes, like, when any article would come out, it's like for a day people would be like, oh, new allegations, but then they would forget. So I think that right now, like, we need to hold on to this momentum and don't let people forget, because people do forget. Right now people are outraged. And I did watch the docuseries. I watched all the episodes all three nights, and it was a lot. So I understand not wanting to see that. Like, I didn't watch it because I'm like, oh, let, you know, I need to be convinced. Like, I already know he's trash. I canceled him. I mean, not like I was like a big hardcore fan, but I already know that he's trash. I don't need to watch this to know that. But I mean, I did want to watch it to, I don't know, just to see it, you know? And it was a lot, like a lot. Like, even in the first episode, like the first night was a lot. And I was like, wow. Like, there's five more of these fucking episodes? Like, are you kidding me? It's, like, a fucking lot. And for people that sat there and watched that docuseries and then to say, I don't care, or he's innocent, or whatever the fuck, I'm just, no. Like, a lot of it, the whole thing is triggering. It's triggering also just to see the conversations afterwards. Because people are really showing their asses, like they do all the time. But this has been, you know, for me, I know that I want to, when we talk about R. Kelly, I always want to center that these girls and women are black. Like, and that is why he has gotten away with it. And so, like, it's very important to center that, right? But I also, like, seeing that and knowing that he's a pedophile, right? Like, point blank. Like, I hate just, like, all these talks of, like, young girls. And it's like, yes, they're young girls, but also they're children. They're not just young girls. They are children. It's, like, childs that you're preying on and abusing. And people that refer to it as a quote-unquote sex tape. I'm like, no, it's not a fucking sex tape. And it's not child porn. Like, the ways in which we talk about it is very important, too. And it's just, like, a lot to deal with. But we've talked about how older men prey on young girls. And with R. Kelly, again, it's like, it's not just young girls. It's like actual children, right? Like 14, like 12-year-olds. Like, get the fuck out of here. But grown men that also just like prey on teenage girls, right? Which we've talked a lot about. And that I have experience in. I keep going back to that and like seeing so many comments of people being dismissive because they're like, oh, well, these girls, like these girls knew what they were doing. I'm like, these girls also go out after grown men, and like these girls, like that's a narrative that, or like comments that I've been seeing over and over. And that's triggering because when I was in that position, when I was like 14 and hanging out with some fucking 22-year-old, if I remember actually telling, I think it was my cousin, and she's my age, you know, but I remember telling her about me liking this guy who was a lot older than me, and how he like kind of just stopped talking to me, or like how he wouldn't really talk to me only when he wanted to, right? Because I really like this guy. And she was like, well, you know, it's kind of like your fault, like you're a little girl essentially, and like kind of putting like the blame on me, right? And of course, like my cousin probably didn't know it better either, because she was my age, and that was just probably what she had heard as well. But this is something that has been told to me too when I have been in these situations, just kind of like, well, you went after him, you talked to him, you knew how old he was. And it's like, who is the adult here? Because at the end of the day, I can, like, if I was 14 and I liked some guy that was 23 and I called him and I texted him, at the end of the day, he could be like, you know what? No. You are young. You need to stop. You need to stop calling me. Whatever, right? Like, people act like a 14-year-old has, like, the maturity to understand that they're being taken advantage of or that they're being manipulated. And so all of this has been very, like, a lot for me to read, and I try not to read the comments because they just piss me off. And then I think, wow, can you imagine, like, the girls that have gone through this or are going through this, reading what everybody's saying and, like, putting the blame on them? And it's just, it is a lot. Like, every time these conversations come to light, I'm very, like, you want to be like, oh, finally, we're talking about this, we're having this conversation. But at the same time, it's just, like, you see how vile people are. And how rape culture so just, like, everywhere. Yeah,
the conversation goes, like, downhill, like, immediately. Like, immediately. And...
Mm-hmm. And some...
It's just defeating, right? It's just... It can be really defeating.
It is.
But I also think about, like, how, like... We gotta push through, right? Because it's, like... Especially if we're people who are, like... removed or privileged, like, not to be, like, the victims in this situation or even, like, remotely ever, like, have the possibility of that. Like, I think immediately about how, like, specifically, like, Black people on Twitter, like, this was, like, the topic for, like, all weekend. But, like, white Twitter, on the other hand, was, like, having completely discussions about, completely different discussions, right? And, like, completely ignoring that. This, like, phenomenon was, like, taking place, right? Because it didn't pertain to them. And it wasn't a priority to them. And it just, like, was really exemplary of the kind of, like, allyship that is, like, missing. And that has been missing forever.
Yeah, I think someone pointed out about, specifically about white feminists, and how a lot of them weren't really aware that this was happening. And again, like, I... would understand that someone might not follow R. Kelly because these stories haven't been this mainstream, right? But at the same time, I'm like, if you follow Black women, if you follow feminists that aren't just fucking white, like, you would know. Like, you would know that R. Kelly is a piece of shit. But it's not on your fucking radar. It's on your radar now because there's celebrities speaking out and all this shit, but for you to say, for white feminists to be like, oh, I didn't know, you know, that this R. Kelly thing was happening, it's like, no. And when I shared recently an article about how his Spotify streams have gone up, which we also talked about in another episode that you, I remember you mentioned that the ticket sales went up the last time he was in the headlines, and people were like, well, you know, people are just, like, curious. Some people might not know who R. Kelly is until they're listening to their music. And I'm like, maybe, like, a few people. Let's say a few people might not know who R. Kelly is somehow and are like, oh, I'm going to see what this is all about. Yeah, maybe, but no. For it to be that many, like, high numbers, it's like, no. And it's also, people just don't care. At the end of the day, like, people justify and derail because at the end of the day, they just don't care. Like, and that's what bothers me. I would just be like, just say you don't care or don't say anything at all. Like, why are you, what about this victim? Or the narrative that we talked about with Bill Cosby, that it's like, oh, you know, he's Black and this is the only reason that he has, like, this whole docuseries, and where's the docuseries for Harvey Weinstein, which exists, by the way. And also, this docuseries was made and produced by a Black woman. It's not Lifetime. Lifetime didn't go and make this documentary. It was just aired on Lifetime, made by a Black woman. So it's just, let's get R. Kelly the hell out of here, which is going to be hard because he got away the first time and he has a lot of money and a lot of power. So we can only hope that justice comes, but
But for that to happen, have to, like, quit their shit. Quit their bullshit.
They do, because, you know, watching in the docuseries when they were talking about the first trial, and this was another thing, you know, when I knew, obviously, who R. Kelly, when I was growing up, I knew who R. Kelly was because, I think mostly because of the Space Jam song, and, like, I knew who he was. Like I said, I don't really know that, I only know the songs that were the hits, which was probably only, like, three songs, but to me, but I knew who he was, and during the trial, where he went to trial, like, that, apparently that was in 2008, and I don't remember that at all. I mean, I was 18, I think, but this was really, I mean, I didn't really have, I had, like, a shitty phone that didn't have the internet. Like, I wasn't really following the news at that time in my life, so I do not remember that at all. Like, I remember people making jokes about the tape, like they still do. And I remember knowing something about a tape, but I didn't really know all the facts. And I mean, I didn't really, to be honest, I didn't care at that time in my life about the things I care about now. So I wasn't like, oh, let me go find out what's happening on the news with R. Kelly. Like, it was just something that wasn't a part of my life. And I just remember now, like, hearing about this trial, like, just what the fuck? Like, how did this person get off? Like, how did he still have a career after that? It just, it's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man, like, again, like, in order for change to happen, like, we need to keep talking about this. We need to keep advocating, supporting the activists who have been doing the work for a long time, right? Because that's how we got, like, results with people like Santoya Brown, who was recently granted clemency, not with an expunged record altogether, but, you know, that's the next battle. But, you know, she's going to go on parole, I think, she's going to be eligible for parole starting, like, the beginning of August 2019, and it's going to, her, like, sentence is going to be, like, commuted to life served, I mean to time served. Her sentence is going to be commuted to time served, and she's going to be on parole for 10 years, which is, like, you know, like, I know reading that and saying that, like, that sounds like it's not that, it doesn't sound like a big victory, but it really is, especially given how much, how long people have been working on this, right? How many, like, activists, like, fought to get this public attention, right? It takes all of us to do something for us to get results.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's Santoya Brown. People have been, black women mostly have been organizing for like a decade. And I keep seeing people crediting fucking Kim Kardashian. And I'm just, or like, they're like, thank you, governor. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Like, the only reason the governor gave her that was because of organizers. Like, not because of fucking Kim Kardashian. And I'm not gonna lie, maybe Kim Kardashian tweeting about it obviously got people that might have not known about her that attention, you know, which is, like, I've said about Kim Kardashian, if she wants to do something good, then fucking do it, right? But it's also, like, I'm not going to say thank you, Kim Kardashian, when she wasn't on the ground for years working towards this. So, yeah, a lot of the things that, big things that happen that seem, even if they're small victories, are all because of organizers doing groundwork every fucking day.
Yep. And I think about that too when folks want to think like politicians about shit, and I'm like, that politician didn't do anything. Like change doesn't come from the White House, right? It comes from ground activists, like, hustling their asses off and, like, doing the thankless work of, you know, actually organizing, providing, like, healing, all of that, right? And that's why, like, a lot of these, like, rallies to vote and shit like that are, like, often, like, really triggering for organizers, because it's like, oh, everybody's investing their energy into this, like, circus of voting, like, every 2 years, but where are they when, like, shit actually needs advocacy and shit actually needs support, and everybody's gone because they think they've done their civil duty, like, by going to a ballot, right? Going to cast a ballot.
Yes, yes, yes. So, shout out to organizers. Also, like, I hate when people talk about as like a side note, like the revolution in this future sense. I'm like, the revolution's happening. It might not be this like civil war, like fucking, you know, I think the revolution everyone thinks of in their head is like this massive thing happening. But it's like the revolutions are happening in your community by organizers every day. Which is something I feel gives me hope, because sometimes it does feel like the state that we're in is overwhelming and you just feel like, wow, this is shitty. Like, nothing is ever going to get better. Where do I find hope in this? And it's, I just remember that. That there are people doing work every day and, like, still fighting. And I don't want to romanticize that either. I don't want to be like, they're fighting every day for us. It's like, no, that's hard fucking work. And it's overwhelming and it's shitty. And it comes with a lot of shit, too. It's not this great heroic thing and that's it. But it's just, they do, organizers do work every day. So... just, yeah, putting that out there.
Yeah. But you know who isn't doing any work?
Who's not doing any work this week?
Residente from Residente Calle 13, who doesn't believe that white privilege exists for Latinxes, right? And actually believes that hip-hop was like a colonial thing, right? Hip-hop, the thing that he's involved in,
is that what he said? Because I read the tweet, and to be honest, like, it was in Spanish, so I was like, am I reading this? I was honestly like, am I reading this correctly? Like, did, because you know how like Twitter has like the translate, and I put the, you know, but sometimes it doesn't translate it right. But I was honestly, is this what he's saying? Is this real, or is this not being translated right? So he did say that about hip hop.
Yeah, he was like, hip hop didn't begin with. Like, the migrants came and they brought hip-hop to Puerto Rico and Cuba, and they worked with slaves in the sugar factories. And then he went on to say, and I'm translating, he said, no Latinx in the USA, as white as they may be, enjoys white privilege. And he put white privilege in quotation marks. Surely we must think, that he was responding actually to Rebecca Lane. Rebecca Lane, who we featured on the episode about Central American issues, she's this queer, like, brown woman from Guatemala.
She's from Guatemala.
Yeah, she's from Guatemala. She was talking about how, like, you know, colorism, racism, like, is a very real thing in the industry. And he was talking about how, like, black Americans, like, essentially get all the privilege in hip-hop in the United States and that, like, and things like that. And then he... if that wasn't bad enough, eventually he went on to claim that, like, he experiences, like, essentially reverse racism for being white, like, in Puerto Rico. And I'm just like,
We mentioned him, too, recently about how he's the Chicano's fave new
fave. Yeah, in the live episode. No, it's because I know so many of those, like, little, like, Chicano, like, revolutionaries, like, who are, like, all about Residente. And these are all cishet Latinos and Chicanos who always do this, like, at a party, at a cookout, like, we're having a good time, and then all of a sudden they want to get political, and they put on Residente. You know, their song of choice is always, like, Latino America, and, like, and it's just like, this motherfucker, like, has, like, the most basic understanding of, like, quote-unquote revolution, like, has no gender or sexual, like, politic, like, no, apparently no race politic, but y'all want to center him, like, and, like, hold him up as, like, this, like, conscious dude, right? And it's, like, it's so, it, like, this joke writes itself, like, these, you know, cishet Latino Chicano activists, like, look up to this man because he's them, like... He's then...
Yeah, I was about to say, well, neither do they.
Yeah.
Like, they have no... They're just, you know, we're brown and we're proud. Viva la raza, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's, like, how deep their politics go.
Yeah. And, like, that's how deep this dude's politics go. Like, how are you gonna talk about, like, there's no racism or colorism in Latin America, but like Yalitza Aparicio is like the first, like, you know, indigenous woman to appear in in Vogue, right, in Mexico, like, and she didn't better in Puerto Rico.
First ever.
Yeah.
First ever.
And like, I think Vogue Mexico had existed for 20 years, but like, and that's just one example. Like, we can look at the history of like telenovelas, of music. Why is Celia Cruz the only black girl who's ever really made like icon status, right? Like, it's so ridiculous. It's laughable. I can't even. ¿De dónde le salió? Like, where does he get off on like even pretending that like white privilege doesn't exist in Latin America, of all mestizo places?
Yeah, I. Again, this was probably because of the. When I read the tweet, from what I thought he was saying, which is still wrong, but I thought he was saying that there was no, quote unquote, white privilege in the U.S. He was talking about all Latin America.
It wasn't just that tweet. The tweet, like, he.
Okay, I didn't see the whole. Yeah, thing no, then. Like, it was just like two tweets that I saw, in response to Rebecca Lane, and yeah, so.
After that, he began like responding to everybody. And then it just got worse and worse and worse, to the point where he eventually, when I quit, when I was like, oh, I'm so done. It was when he told the black girl, actually, Bad Dominicana, Zaira Kelly, he told her that he's experienced like reverse racism. He told this to like two Afro-Latinos, Afro-Latinxes in the thread, like of all people. And I was just like, what is this dimension that I'm living in where this person think that that's a very real thing? So yeah, no,
it's not out of the norm. Like, obviously we know that light skin, especially white Latinxes in the U.S. and in Latin America, it don't have to think about that, I feel. And it's weird because, you know, when my family lives in Juarez, whenever I would go to Juarez, I remember my cousin, she has like really white, like they were white Mexicans that she was friends with, like blonde hair, green eyes, like white little Mexican girls, you know, this is when we were younger. And it was weird to me because I'd be like, okay, I don't know. I just saw the way that they had more money than my family.
Yeah.
And this was when I was little, and I still picked up on that they, because obviously of the way that they looked, they somehow lived better than my cousin.
Yeah.
Even though they lived kind of like in a similar community, right? So growing up now and like having conversations with my cousin, I think that my understanding of race and my understanding of colorism and the way that I exist in the U.S., like, she doesn't really understand it that much. Because I think in Mexico, it's like very nationalist. So in Mexico, everyone's like, we're all Mexican.
Yeah.
Which people in the U.S. try to say that too, but it doesn't work that much because everyone in the U.S. is kind of like, there's so many different people here to say we're all American and we're all the same when we know that we're not. But I think in Mexico, like, they really try, obviously, to push that narrative that they're all Mexican. And you know damn well that the white Mexicans are rich and that you all erase and exclude indigenous people and black people. And so for us, like, we see it, but I think, like, in Mexico, it's just, and I'm speaking just particularly in Mexico, but I'm sure it's, like, all Latin America, where it's, like, they just want to hold on to the nationalism aspect of it because they don't want to talk about racism. They don't want to talk about colorism. They're like, oh, we're all Mexican. It's totally cool, even though deep down you know that it's not at all. And no, I don't know, maybe no one has ever told him this. I don't want to say that's true because I'm sure people have, but maybe not on like a public scale where he's had to address it.
Well, that's one of the problems of like nationalism as race, right? Which is one of the results of like the history of mestizaje, right? And like nation building in Latin America is that they made everyone think that there's no one above anyone else, right? Because we're all this nationality, right? And people ate that shit up, right? Especially blanquitos, because it ensures that they never have to check themselves, right? They never have to question why it is that they have more than, like, non-white people. And when it comes to Residente, I think that he has to come to a very uncomfortable realization that maybe he doesn't deserve all the success that he has. And I think that's a very daunting thing for anybody to realize, but especially for someone who's never had to confront that.
Yep. you, Rochelle, write about that. He's like, oh, maybe I am mediocre. And they are. Like, these people are, because, like, they're white. They don't really need to try that hard. But I was really happy. I was glad to see that Rebecca Lane called this shit out. Because I think she's so great. And that I also saw, I mean, I didn't really fault, like, I only saw, like, a few of those tweets, so I didn't even know this was, like, a whole thread happening that I'm glad I didn't see. But a few comments that I saw were people, like, calling him out.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm glad he's, like, being called out for that or, like, addressed and not. I mean, he said it to Rebecca Lane, so it was hard for people not to see that. But.
Yeah, so I'm glad people are, like, weren't being like ridiculous and taking his side or anything, because he was being a fucking child, like, straight up.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Yalitza too, because I remember reading comments during, you know, when they first posted the Vogue cover, and a lot, I mean, just a lot, and this was mostly in like Mexican pages. And so I remember, like, this one like, the top comment on one of them was, like, oh, can we all stop saying, you know, because some people were like, yes, this is, like, the real, quote-unquote, face of Mexico, which is, you know, another comment to unpack. But this one person was like, oh, can we please stop saying, you know, this is the face of Mexico, because we're all different. Yeah. We all come in different shades, and let's not do this nationalist thing. And I'm just like, really? Now is when you don't want to do the nationalist thing? Now is when all of a sudden you want to acknowledge that there's different races in Mexico? Like, get the fuck out of here. It's just so hypocritical. And then, do you remember also on Twitter during that, when the cover came out, and there were so many white Latinx, yeah, like, showing their asses and being racist and colorist as fuck. Racist, actually, not colorist, racist, and it's not surprising, but I was like, wow. Like, what? I remember this one guy specifically saying pretty much, like, oh, I'd rather look like the colonizer.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that tweet? Yeah. It was, what the fuck? But then they want to sit there and cry. You know, like, oh my god, like, oh my god, someone's being racist towards me.
Because I'm white.
Like, because I'm white. So sad. And I also think, specifically in the U.S., I think white Latinx confuse racism with xenophobia.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yes, there's a lot of xenophobia, especially when they find out you're speaking Spanish, or you're Latinx. Like, that's totally valid, but you don't experience racism.
Yeah.
Period. So let's not conflate those two things. And also, this false narrative that colorism goes both ways, because it fucking doesn't. It works just like racism. And I've had so many people, when I talk about colorism, say that it goes both ways. Yeah. I'm like, no, it doesn't. Okay?
And it's just,
like, sorry, people. It's because people don't think I'm Latina. I'm like, okay, and bitch? Like, how does that make you oppressed somehow? Yeah. It doesn't.
Yeah, it's fucking annoying. I'm glad that I don't support this dude.
I'm glad I don't know him.
Yeah, I don't know her. Like, I really don't. I support Yalitza. You know, I'm so glad that her movie, like, nobody else is involved.
But it is her movie.
Yeah, I'm glad Roma swept, like, the Golden Globes, and it's, like, a front runner for, like, Oscars and shit. And I, you know what it reminded me of right now that, it, like, Roma won, like, you know, a Golden Globe? Is that, like, I remember when, like, Leo won his Oscar for, like, that bear movie. Who was it? Iñárritu or whatever, that other Mexican director. And how the Mexicans went wild in, like, in Mexico at the Capitol. Do you remember, like, the videos of them, like, cheering, like, Leo, like, or Leo, yeah, Leo, but with Leo? And, like, I'm just like, where is all, like, the commotion about, like, Roma? And, like, it doesn't exist, because they'd rather cheer for, like, some American white dude and, like, this, like, white director than, like, an actual brown girl, like, winning. Like, and it's just like, I cannot.
Embarrassing. White Latinx, you know. every year we got to start off the year. It seems
dragging them
with their dragging, dragging them, of course. But you know what? There are some whites, some nice whites that I like. There are some nice whites that aren't Latinx, that are just whites. And one of them, her name is Kacey Musgraves. Oh. Do you know her?
I love her. I've lived for her. I've been trying to get you to listen to her for like a full fucking year. And I don't know what inspired you over the winter that to get.
What did inspire me? I don't know. I really don't know. I think I've been running out of music to listen to where I'm just like, I need new music. And I randomly, I don't know. I really don't. I was just like, I'm just gonna listen to it. Yeah. I don't know. I just started listening to Golden Hour. Also because I you know, the Grammys are coming up. When is it? Like next month, I think. And so there's like a lot of talk about like the best album, which we have. Let's see. We have Drake. We have Janelle Monae.
Post Malone.
Her. I don't know who that is.
Cardi B.
And Kacey Musgraves, I think. There's somebody else that I wasn't familiar with because I remember thinking, I don't know this person.
Yeah.
But the fact that Post Malone is in there, I just buy. But Janelle Monae should win. But
yeah.
I was curious to listen to this, to this album because everyone was like, "Oh, this is like a really good album. It's like nominated, you know, whatever." So I did.
Everyone was by the way. I mean, it was just me.
You, yes, it was you, but there was other people also online. But anyway, I listened to it and then I was like, "Oh, okay, like this isn't bad. Like this is good." And I really liked it. And then I was like, okay, let me Google her. You know, I got to Google everyone I listen to. And so I was like, oh, she's from Texas.
Yeah.
She's from Texas. I'm from Texas. We're both country girls. We're both white. We were both born the same year. She's a Leo, unfortunately, but I like her.
She's a Leo. Oh, no wonder I love
she's
her.
She's a Leo. That's why she dresses so good.
She's an icon, like a fashion icon.
She is. She is a fashion icon. I noticed that. And so, yeah, she's super hot.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. She's super hot. And so I was doing some some little research on her, and I came across that one song that all the country people were mad. Yeah, the gay song, the quote-unquote gay song that people were mad that she made. Her country. Okay, so we're all, like, going on about Kacey. So Kacey Musgraves is a country singer, and she's from Texas, nominated for Grammy of the Year for her album Golden Hour. You all should check it out. But apparently, you know, she's a country singer. She's our age. She's 30. And she's kind of seen as this, from what I gathered, like, quote-unquote progressive voice in the country genre. Like, she's pro-LGBTQ.
She's pro people of color.
Like she.
She was just like funny to say. It's like, okay, yeah, you support basic human rights, but it's like yeah. when we think about country, like we think about like regressive, like right wing motherfuckers, right? Like, and it's just like,
yeah.
So her, like her first big song, "Follow Your Arrow," which is how I found her, was like talking about like, you know, being like bi or like, you know, it's okay to be gay and it's okay to smoke weed.
It's okay to be a slut or not be a slut or.
And like, it was like such a big deal. And she won like best country song and best country album for that song and that record. It was a same girl, different trailer park or something like that. And I've been a fan since then. But she's grown a lot as an artist. Her latest album, like Golden Hour, combines like pop with like disco and like psychedelic, like Talking Heads type of rock and roll, like, but also very vintage, like Dolly Parton, Elvis-y vibes. And it's just like, it makes a lot of callbacks to like vintage and like very kitschy rock and country, but it's also very contemporary, right? And she was interviewed recently, I think it was by BuzzFeed, and they asked her like, oh, what do you think about like, you know, you're a woman in country and you're not getting played on the radio. And she's like, honestly, like, I think that question is so, like, it was old when they asked Dolly Parton that in the 70s. Like, right now we have to, like, question maybe, like, yeah, I'm a woman in country and I'm not getting radio play in country radio. But you know who doesn't even exist, period, is, like, black people, people of color in country, LGBT people in country. Like, I want the conversation to, like, start going there now. And I was like, okay, bitch, like, I love you more now. Yeah.
Do you think that LGBTQ folks and people of color are going to want to make country music?
They already do. Though? Like,
I don't know. See, that is a good thing, because I don't listen to country, to be honest. Like, there's a few, you know, I am from Texas. There's, like, a few, but I don't sit there and I'm like, I love country and I listen to all these country singers. But they're all white. I mean, the ones that I'm familiar with, like, I actually know. I think I've seen, I don't know his name, like a black country singer. I don't know, but the point is, yes, that is a good point. I was just saying, like, I don't know any LGBTQ country singers, but or people of color. But again, I don't really pay much attention to country.
I mean, I think about, like, well, I mean, I do listen to country. I was raised on Shania. My older sister loves Shania.
Oh, can we go with the Shania shit?
I love Shania.
Everyone knows. Okay, everyone knows Shania. I feel like she's a given. Like, I feel like we're like, I listen to country, I listen to Shania.
Oh,
I feel
my,
like,
God. Stop invalidating my identity as, like, a country.
I'm not invalidating you. I'm just saying, like, okay, Shania's a given. Like, I don't think, oh, I like country.
But she
like
was, like, Shania. My gateway drug, right? And so then from there, I listened to other people. And so, like, at the top of my head, like, there's, like, Steven.
Shania had a good
crossover.
She had a good fashion sense, too. Kind of like Kacey Musgraves. Yeah. Like, she was very, like, that song that don't impress me much. You remember that video? Yes. Where she was wearing, like, that leopard. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Love it.
I love Shania. And so, you know, I have followed it. And I think about, like, Steve Grand, who was, like, a cis gay white dude. But he was gay, right? And singing country. And, like, his first song was, like, American Boy or something like that. Like, My American Boy or some shit like that. And, like, now we have Kane Brown and, like, other, like, black artists, like, trying to break into the scene, right? Jimmy Allen actually, like, debuted at number one, like, which was, like, major, right? And that was, like, it was, like, at the end of last year. But, yeah, like, so, like, they exist, and it's just, like, they don't get play. And I really enjoyed the Kacey Musgraves, like, you know, whatever platform, as little as she has or as much as she has, like, she shared it. And she's very much about that. But on top of that, she makes really good pop music. I feel like she's, like, a country Carly Rae Jepsen. And I think that's what really attracted to her. Like, her this era, because I kind of skipped out on her last era. But this era, I just feel like, you know, before Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer, I felt that Kacey Musgraves needed to be the one to win Album of the Year, because it's just such a perfect album. Golden Hour from beginning to end. It just, like, there's no skips. It's so cohesive. It's so simple, but it's so smart in its lyricism. It's, like, the way it, like, goes very far into pop without losing its countryness. It's also very, like, it's very, like, I think that for some people, it, like, reminds them of, like, Shania, like you mentioned. But for me, it reminds me a little of, like, Sheryl Crow. Like, well, Sheryl Crow was very, like, alternate, like, adult contemporary, but also, like, twangy. And I feel like that's the spirit of Kacey Musgraves is, like, exuding in her lyricism now. And so, all since it debuted until, like, what is the album that, like, until Mitski's album, Be the Cowboy came out, like, it was the only thing I basically played, like, every single day. Like, I've been obsessed, and I'm so happy that you're on board now. And she's such a joy to follow. She's such a joy to follow on Instagram, too.
Yeah, I love when she says yeehaw.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, bitch, I'm gonna go to the rodeo right now with you.
Yeah, you should go.
It's in Houston. Yeah. Yeah, I know, I'm so far away. We're both from Texas, but so very far away from each other. No, but I was going to say also that song that we were talking about, Follow Your Arrow, I forgot to mention, actually, that Brandi Clark, who's also a country singer, she's a lesbian.
Oh.
She actually co-wrote that song with her.
Shut up.
I just remembered that, yeah. So yeah, there is a you know, you're right. There's, like, LGBTQ folks in country. And I don't know, I think when people hear country, a lot of us, for good reasons, think, like, racist, white, men, and those What do you call them? Those trucks that they ride.
Monster trucks? Pickup rigs.
Pick all the, you know, just like that image. So we're like, why would we even want to be associated with that? But it's like, you know, there's people that exist within that music, and that is okay for them to exist and try to change that. I guess.
Yeah. So the song we're going to pick off of Casey Musgrave's Golden Hour is High Horse, which is like the high energy track off Golden Hour, which overall is a very like mellow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sweet.
Smoke. Yeah, but this is like the dancey song. So we didn't want to like start the first episode with like this sad song. But this is a really good song. It's I know all the gays are behind it, and yeah, all the gays love this song from what I've read.
Yeah, it's a good song.
I'm off from what I've read. It's a good song. It's about someone who thinks really highly of themselves, and they just need to get off their fucking high horse. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Get out of this fucking town. That's what she's saying, essentially. Yeah. So that's to all our haters this year. Hey. And that's the energy we're on right now, yeah. 2019.
Yeah, get off your high horse. Go away.
Yeah, we're not here for the educated Latinxes. Fuck out of here.
Hashtag educated Latinxes. They're like, Ruben, you finished college. And I'm like, what of it? What about it?
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll leave you with that. Remember to follow us on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Bitter Brown Femmes. You know, remember, if you want some resources and shit, like to learn more about the things we talk about, go to bitterbrownfemmespodcast.com, and remember to book us, because we're poor.
Help make our 2019 better, please. Thank you.
Yeah, feel free to book us. Oh, yeah, we have... and we'll stay tuned to our social media so we can keep you posted on where we're going to be, because we have a couple of live dates already lined up for the year. We'll let y'all know. And, yeah, reach out to us at bitterbrownfemmespodcast.com/bookings to book us. And with that said, I hope your 2019 is off to a good start.
Better than ours, yes. Cheers to that.
Cheers.
Bye. Bye. Oh, I bet you think you're John.